Have you ever wondered where the problems in the world today would exist if we had deeper connection to ourselves, others, and the environment, and acted from that place? Welcome to the Conscious Action Podcast with your host, Brian Berneman, who believe that connection is the key to taking conscious action as individuals and creating a better world. We are here to raise awareness and inspire meaningful action by sharing stories, knowledge, and conversations with thought leaders and change makers. From sustainability to well-being and everything related to conscious living, our mission is to empower you to be the change that you want to see in the world. Welcome everyone to a new episode of the Conscious Action Podcast. I am Brian Berneman, your host, and I have the pleasure to be joined all the way from Canada by Sherry Chaban. Thank you, Sherry, so much for being here, for taking the time, and for everybody that is watching and listening to us, Sherry. What can you share about you? Who is Sherry?
Oh my goodness, what a deep question to unpack. And this is how we're starting our conversation. But first of all, I want to say thank you so much, Brian, for having me on the show. I'm so incredibly honored to speak to you today and have this beautiful conversation together. So I guess I'll start off by sharing my story, because usually we can understand how a person is just from their background. And so growing up, I was a child athlete. I was a tomboy. I was super involved in sports. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I just always had to compete against the boys. Mm-hmm. I always had to outrun boys in my class. I had to do more push-ups than them. I had to arm wrestle them just to show them I'm tougher. And so this was sort of how I envisioned myself for the whole time in my elementary years and in my middle school years. And in fact, I was a competitive swimmer. That was sort of my sport at the time. And by the time I got to high school, I was now involved in varsity sports. I was doing basketball and volleyball and track and field events. And so winning first place in events was a normal thing for me. Being MVP was a normal thing for me. And again, this is how I always saw myself. I'm just Sherry the athlete. And this all changed very suddenly one day. And this was when I was 16 years old. I was actually living in Switzerland at the time. I was in boarding school. And my roommate and I had decided to go downtown to buy tickets for a Pearl Jam concert, because Pearl Jam was coming into town. And well, they were one of my favorite bands. So we went downtown, Lugano, we purchased our Pearl Jam tickets, and now we have to rush back to campus and grab the bus so that we can check in on time, because there are severe consequences when you're in boarding school and you don't check in on time. And so as we were running to grab the bus, we started to see that it was taking off from the station. So I quickly ran across the street to try to catch the bus. And then the next thing that I remember was waking up in the hospital. And so my poor roommate had witnessed everything. She saw me get hit by a car. She saw my body get lodged from one side of the road all the way to the other side of the sidewalk. And then an ambulance had arrived and took me all the way to the hospital. And this whole entire time I was unconscious, so I didn't even know that this had happened. And so when I first came to, when I first regained consciousness, I was sore. I had pain in my knee. I had pain in my body. And my face was super scraped up. I had a lot of abrasions on my face just from the accident. And we thought that was the extent of the accident. Of course, it was obvious there was a concussion there, but nobody diagnosed it. And I was sent back to school. And after a couple of weeks, after I felt less sore, I went back to basketball practice. And so as I came back to practice, maybe a week or so later, I started to notice that I was getting a very intense pain in my right glute. And this pain, I thought at first was maybe soreness, because it had been a while since I had been training. I'd taken obviously some time off since the accident, but it kept getting worse. And this felt really different. It kept going down my leg until it got more and more and more severe, very, very rapidly, until I couldn't walk uphill, until I couldn't stand for a long time, until I couldn't sit for a long time. And now I needed someone to actually help me take a shower and do all those little things that we normally have to do every day. So that's when I went back home to visit my parents, and I went to go see a doctor, and I discovered that I had severely injured my back and I needed an immediate surgery. Mm-hmm. And so I had a back surgery. They alleviated the compression on the sciatic nerve in my right leg. And after the surgery, my doctor sat me down and told me, Sherry, you're not allowed to play sports anymore. You really have to stop. Your back is in a critical condition. And if you continue to play sports, you're going to make it worse. And maybe one day, if you do become pregnant, this could also create a lot of issues. Mm-hmm. That was probably the worst news I ever heard in my life. I was so incredibly upset. But the doctor said that. And so I listened. And so I, of course, stopped hanging out with the athletes. They weren't my group anymore. And now I needed a new social environment. And so since around that age, when you're a teenager and you need to connect and feel that you belong to a particular environment and community, well, I started hanging out with a crowd that accepted me very easily, and it was a party crowd. And so I found myself involved in a lot of habits that I would never have seen myself do. The type of habits that your parents warn you about and tell you, don't do this. This is not the right path for life. Well, that's what I found myself in for several years. And it really was in my early 20s, I must have been 20 or 21 at this point, where I had this massive aha moment. And I woke up one day just absolutely repulsed and just disgusted with myself. Just a lot of self-loathing, just not being able to recognize my actions. And even though at that time in my life, I had now done a degree in biochemistry, I was actually doing a master's degree in chemistry, I decided to sign up at a local gym. This is against, obviously, all of the doctor's orders. I signed up at my local gym. And even though every single day I was also reliant on pain medication, I was taking pain medication to control the chronic back pain that I was experiencing all the time, I knew I had to do something. So when I first signed up at the gym, Brian, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. Again, I'm a scientist, I'm doing chemistry, but I just started copying people around me. I didn't know what the exercises for or what the movements were, but I just imitated them. And I stayed consistent for months. And after those months of just showing up so consistently, I realized that my back pain was almost gone and I was able to come off of my pain medication. And I was able to actually feel more stable and strong in my body. And so I bought a treadmill and I started to slowly run 5 minutes at a time until I eventually worked up to a full hour at a time outside. And that was the big turning point of really my life. And so I dropped out of my master's degree in chemistry and I went back to school to study everything I possibly could about the human body. And so I joined a program in exercise science. I became a certified athletic therapist. Eventually, I became an osteopath. And then I took every single course I possibly could on nutrition, on biomechanics, on injury prevention, on prenatal, postnatal training, you name it, I took it. And that really was where I would say my whole health and fitness career restarted. And my goal was to help people overcome any obstacle. Because if I could do this against doctor's orders, and even though I was given this diagnosis, then I know other people can do this too. And it was all about listening to the body. It was all about being so in tune with the body's messages. And I believe that we all have a story, Brian. We all have something. And this is part of life. And this is part of the struggle of life. And for me, and maybe for others, it is a serious injury. And maybe for some people, it's a dis-ease that they were told that they would never be able to overcome or be able to even exercise or move their body because of. And maybe for other people, this is limiting beliefs or maybe even a struggle with weight. And so that really is how I show up and help people shift their identity. Because when we shift our identity and we change who we think we are, we rewrite our own story, we can create anything we imagine.
Wow. Thank you, Sherry, first of all, for sharing your story. I love the aspect of listening to people sharing stories because, you know, as you're saying, sometimes people see you where you are now, like, and they don't know all of that. They don't know that, you know, you weren't like all the time like this. This isn't, you know, like there's some people that we believe, oh, they are born just like this. They are super gifted, like, which that actually happens. You know, there's people that are physically gifted or that have a talent or whatever that they came into this world with. And as well, they had to a lot of times work on that. It wasn't always smooth. And I love the fact that when you're sharing all of this, there's so much of an understanding on a holistic experience, because that's a lot of times my way of thinking, my way of seeing everything, that is that, you know, we have a past. And then I love what you said, because I actually have run a lot of programs on rewriting your story, because I love that. I love the fact that we can take ownership and not allow our past experience to dictate our future. And that is, it's huge to understand from a lot of different perspectives, as you say, you know, like you need to understand the way that you think, what you're eating, what you're doing, like the people that you hang out with as well, as you shared, you know, you change groups and suddenly you start to behave differently. And all of this has such an impact on then our health and well-being that it's huge. And I would love to know a little bit more in your story. So you go through all of this, and I know that then you open a gym back in Canada. What was that like to be able to actually see that you have this space, that you're able to have people just like you started going to that gym and didn't know what to do? Like, how have you helped the people? How was that experience like?
Oh, so good. And you know, one thing I want to come back to, something very, very, very profound that you shared, is the ownership of your story and the circumstances in life. And I just want to put some energy there, because that is so incredibly empowering. And it's the hardest thing for us to do. Mm-hmm. We always want to blame someone else. We always want to blame something outside of ourselves. And I also want to say that you're so spot on, Brian, that from the outside, it always looks like, oh, that person, she's so lucky. She just has a very positive mindset. And because of her positive mindset, she was able to overcome this. But I want to share that I've had so many dark moments. And this is the hero's journey, as they call it. You have those moments where you're fighting against the villain. And that is the whole story, is that there's challenges and there's difficulties. And taking ownership is the only way really that we can make a change. And so if it's always our husband's fault or our girlfriend's fault that we have chips in the house and then that's why we eat them, or it's always someone else's fault that we're not maybe focusing on our self-care, or we're not maybe practicing our meditation or whatever that is, we can never make a change. And so the first step is really to grab that ownership of your life, because if you have that ownership and you say, I am responsible for my choices, then that's how we can write our story. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, being able to serve so many people and to see them overcome their obstacles, I'm going to selfishly say is my greatest pleasure. And so it is a form of giving back, and it's a form of really understanding purpose. And so for me, my story does continue, because when I first opened up my first gym, this was back in 2012. This was probably the fourth CrossFit gym in all of Montreal, CrossFit Westmount. I had, during the process of opening up my gym and through the process of really creating memberships, so I had first started doing private training at home, and then I was doing boot camps in the park, and then hosting boot camps in school gyms, and then eventually I was ready to open up my gym. Throughout a lot of this journey, I was really demanding very physically of my body. And so I started to actually feel a lot of the back pain coming back. Mm-hmm. And now it was getting more and more intense. And then I couldn't believe it. My pain in my leg started again. And what did I do, Brian? I ignored it. I ignored the pain that came back. I ignored the pain in my leg that had come back. Because when I was first opening up my gym in 2012, I had a deadline. And there was a lot of investment on the line, and I had to meet that deadline. And so I didn't listen to my body. I pushed against it. I forced it. I forced it up until literally 1 week before opening. After I finished sanding a plyometric box, we had built all of the equipment in the gym, some of it, and we built these boxes made out of wood. I was sanding one. And the moment I stood up, I collapsed to the floor. And then I was rushed to the hospital by ambulance. And this was on a Wednesday. And by Friday morning, I had an emergency back surgery. So this is my second back surgery now in my life, to alleviate the compression now that was actually centrally happening on my entire spinal cord. And this was more of an emergency surgery than the first time. And I, again, came in on Wednesday. They operated by Friday, and I was 2 millimeters away from cauda equina, which it would have resulted in maybe being in a wheelchair, having to wear diapers for the rest of my life, not being able to control my bowels. And so when I first opened that gym, I have to admit that I actually even asked the person who was creating my website to not even put me on the website. Don't even put me on the website, because I can't even stand. I can't even demonstrate a single squat. I was actually able to come back and start visiting the gym a few months after my back surgery, the second one. And I didn't want anyone to even know that I was the owner. And if I was at a social event and people were asking me, what do you do for work? I didn't even want to tell them because I felt so inauthentic. I felt so out of integrity. How can I be a coach? How can I be a trainer? How can I be a fitness enthusiast and professional when I don't even know how to do a squat right now? And so it was incredibly humbling. And I just kept showing up. I was the person in the background doing the administrative work and going into our yoga room and our therapy room and lying down whenever I needed to. And so eventually, though, as I started to see all of these beautiful souls coming into the gym, these were very, very busy business people. These were moms coming in with young kids. And these were people, a lot of them, who had never exercised or trained in this type of way their whole entire life. But as I watched them transform, as I watched them getting results and showing up and dedicating themselves to themselves, it re-inspired me. And so I decided, oh my God, I'm going to do this. I'm going to rebuild myself back up. And the first commitment that I did to myself is first to learn how to move. And at that point, after that second surgery, I couldn't even bend forward like 30 degrees. I couldn't even fold forward. And so my first intention was I'm going to start with yoga. I'm going to reconnect with my body. That is what I'm going to do. I'm going to learn how to move. I'm going to learn how to feel free and back reconnected with my body. And so after I did that, and I was lucky because I had a yoga teacher coming in at the gym at the time. I did private training with her. I'm like, no, just me 3 times a week. We're just going to do a private yoga session. And eventually I learned how to move and I was finally able to fold forward. I was able to sit and fold forward, which was something that almost felt impossible to me. And then after that, after I regained mobility through yoga, I was able to start body weight workouts. And that was just really how I came back into training. Instead of lifting weights and really loading the spine, I just started to, again, reconnect with the body, use my own body weight, and start to be very creative around workouts and different exercises. Eventually, by the way, all of that training and the exercise I'd created and the little workouts I had put together, that actually ended up becoming my HitDex app, which is really the philosophy behind that app, is how can I train while increasing my intensity, but not loading my back, not loading my spine. And so it just opened up possibility and curiosity. And so all this to say is that life really happens for us and not to us. And it's hard to feel that way when we are in it and it's the circumstances and it's hard and we're struggling. But what I realized is I had to have gotten hit by that car for life to happen for me to find health and fitness. And I had to get re-injured again when I opened my gym so that I can resonate and connect with all of these beautiful souls who are going through the same struggles as me. And for me to even find this way of training where I can respect my body. And again, even against doctor's orders and what people would normally say from a condition like mine, still find a way to make things possible. Most importantly, respecting and listening to the body.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. You know, there's so many things that I'm taking away from what you shared besides like the story, which is super powerful and super inspiring. That reconnecting with the body and listening to the body is so important. I know that was a huge thing in my own journey. As I went to these classes, there were Tibetan yoga, and it was the first time suddenly that I actually felt my body. I didn't know that that's how my body felt, that feelings felt. And it's so interesting what you say about how, you know, like ignoring the body and ignoring the messages. I often say to a lot of people, you know, our body talks to us, we just need to listen. And it's kind of like little by little, it's just knocking on the door a little bit and telling you, hey, look at me, look at me. And then if we don't listen to it based on whatever it is, based on consciously ignoring it because we are pushing, or whether we are conditioned not to feel, or we dissociate from our feelings, that's going to intensify until it's going to tell you, okay, now you cannot do this. And you have, as you're saying, something, you know, like like then you need to be in the hospital or whatever it is. For all of us, it's different. And for me, it's so powerful to be able to see someone else's story and be like, ooh, like, do I want to get there? I mean, it's, as you're saying, like, life happens for us, and whatever it is that is going to happen needs to happen for us to learn and to grow and to develop in the way that we need. And at the same time, we can learn from others and be like, ooh, I'm going to actually listen to my body. I'm going to move it. I'm going to actually notice, what does my body tell me that is the right thing for me to do right now? And again, what you're saying about taking that ownership, that is so important to do that, because then it's like, okay, I cannot blame anybody else. As you said, you know, I cannot blame the people around me for having whatever it is around. It is my choice to do that. And to be able to do that as well, not only we need to listen to the body, we need to pay attention to our mind, because as you're saying, we have, you know, these beliefs and these conditionings, just as many people would listen to the doctors and would never do exercise again, even if they feel like that's what they need to do, or they feel defeated and ashamed, as you felt, you know, like not wanting to put yourself out there, because what will people say? And, you know, overcoming that, or understanding that's there, and again, rewriting that story and rewriting all of those different thought patterns so that we can go beyond that. I just love all of that.
Oh my goodness. I love everything that you just said. And, you know, when our body speaks to us, and those really are the signals, we have this innate ability to really tune into the body's messages. And this is inner wisdom. This is something that we all have. And through awareness, we can start to pick up these cues. And so what I always say is that when we are off our center, when we're not listening to the body's cues, and the body's cues will help us intuitively move, intuitively eat, for example. But when we're off center of these body's cues, the body's cues and the messages and these signals will get louder and louder and louder. And we know we are off our center when first it actually starts to affect our psychology. We start to notice that our emotions are off. Maybe our thought processes are off. Maybe we're thinking about a little bit negatively, blaming people, complaining, criticizing. And then eventually it's going to start to impact our sociology. So the people that we spend time with. Notice now we're having conflicts in our relationships, conflicts in our social environments. And then eventually it's going to impact our physiology. And that now manifests as dis-ease or something breaking down. And so I just want to expand that a little bit further out, because anyone who's ever experienced chronic pain, and you know you've experienced chronic pain after all of these things have happened. You start to feel something is off in your body and your psychology is off. Now you're negative, like, oh, I can't because everything hurts. And I can't do that. And now everything just feels dark and limited and you feel trapped in your circumstance. But then you start to notice that it's also affecting how you're behaving around people. When you're in chronic pain, let me tell you, you're in a bad mood a lot of the time. It's just so much pain. You can't even tolerate yourself, let alone tolerate someone else chewing near your ear. And then finally, you'll feel that in your body. And so these are little signs and cues to just notice, because again, we're not just what we're eating and we're not just what we're moving, but we are the way we think and we are the way we hold our emotions and the way we are interact with other people, and how, of course, we honor our body through the rituals of self-care.
Yes. And, you know, I love that. And I would love for you, Sherry, to touch on something that you briefly mentioned there, that is that intuitive eating. When we, you know, when we are in touch with our bodies, when we're in touch with our feelings as another of the aspects of our life, as we're talking, you know, like the mind, the emotions, the body with movement, eating is a big part of all of this. And I'd love to get your take on what was for you on your own journey. What did you learn out of that, and how do you work on that based on that intuitive eating?
Yeah, so good. So, you know, intuitive eating really, I think, is this topic that's misunderstood these days. And if you go on social media, you might see a lot of people hashtagging intuitive eating, and yet they're really promoting or pushing us to eat junk food and saying that that's intuitive eating. And so I want to back off from that a little bit because I actually like to bring things back down to basics. And what's back down to basics is something that we have, which is called appetite control. And so when we are first born, we have the ability to ask for food when we're hungry. We're actually able to pick up all of our hunger cues. And same thing, we can start to sense satiety. And so I've had two babies, I've had two little girls, and they're not so little anymore, they're teenagers. But when I first had them, when they were hungry, my goodness, if I didn't feed them, that got louder and louder and more violent, and oh my goodness, until I finally fed them. And once they were full, I couldn't put one more drop of milk in their mouth. That was it. They were done, full. And so we actually override these natural cues, and we can see these cues in animals too. Notice that animals, when they're hungry, they eat. When they're not hungry, they walk away from whatever, however much food they have available to them, they just walk away from it. But as we grow up, when we start to get other messaging, especially when this part of the brain starts to develop, so the cognitive part of the brain starts to develop, or the frontal lobe, and we start to override these natural cues because maybe mom makes us finish our plates before we're done eating. No matter what, we can't leave the table. The food on our plate has to be finished, even if we are so full, because we cannot waste food and there are starving kids in Africa. And then also, maybe mom rewarded us with ice cream every time we did something great. And then maybe also mom rewarded us with ice cream every time something terrible happened to us. And so now we're starting to bypass these natural cues, because now we have external information. We learn the programming of, I have to finish my plate. I cannot waste food. And then we learn the programming of, every time something great happens, I have to celebrate with food. And then every time something terrible happens, I also have to celebrate with food to make myself feel better. And then we start dieting because maybe we're told that we need to make a change in our body, either because someone said that to us or because we got influenced from society. And now we start to diet. And then diets take that another level, because now I'm following a plan. It doesn't matter if I'm hungry or not. I have to follow this plan. Doesn't matter if I still need more food. I still have to follow this plan. Doesn't matter if I hate this broccoli. I still have to eat it because I'm following my plan. And now we continue to override these cues until we lose touch of these cues. And generally what ends up happening is we start to develop a disordered relationship with food, especially if we've been dieting and restricting for so long. Anyone who's been dieting for so long, or restricting or denying them themselves from certain foods for a very long time, what happens is that we create a reward system in the brain for that particular food that we're restricting. And then as a result of this reward system, every time we have it, there's a major dopamine hit that is released. Dopamine is the feel-good hormone. It is that reward hormone in the brain, the same hormone that's released when we have cocaine or sugar or certain foods that we've decided are off limits to us due to dieting. And so through this process, and now these are all, by the way, patterns that we just install in our subconscious mind and our subconscious programming, through all of these life experiences, we end up losing sight of our natural hunger cues and our natural satiety cues. And in fact, we don't actually even are able to recognize what our body is needing. And so intuitive eating is reattaching and reconnecting to those cues, those natural cues. And so when we are reconnected with the body, we know exactly what time it is to eat. We know how much food we need, and we even know what it is that we want. And so in order to do that, though, we have to stop dieting. We have to remove all food rules, which means food is no longer polarizing. There's no charge we've placed on food. This is not good and this is not bad. And I'm not good because I ate this, and I'm not bad because I ate that. And what we actually do by removing all charge or neutralizing food is we also detach any emotions that we had connected with those foods. So these emotions generally are guilt or frustration, or if we feel disappointed in ourselves when we eat certain foods. And so all of that needs to happen for us to really reconnect to those natural cues. And so intuitive eating is really just coming back to those primitive cues of food and satiety whenever we're hungry and whenever we're satisfied. And the same thing can also be applied when it comes to intuitive movement. Knowing that on certain days, for example, we may require more foods and we let the body choose. And on other days, maybe we don't need to eat as much because maybe we weren't as active. And so same thing with intuitive movement. When there are certain days that we have a lot of energy because our 100% is different every single day. Some days we're like, oh, cool, I can go for a run. I'm going to work out and I'm going to do yoga. And then other days it's like, I just need to go for a walk and maybe I'll just do some sun salutations and that's really all that my body can handle that day. I'm in my tax seasons. I'm an accountant. There's just so much stress in my life. And so that is the concept. And now somebody may be listening and saying, well, I binge eat right now, or I emotional eat. So you're telling me to intuitively eat, but if I listen to myself, then I'm actually going to end up eating everything in my fridge. And I acknowledge that and I honor that. And what I'll say to you is we have to first and foremost allow for patience and allow for grace as we begin to come back to these connections. It may have been 30 years since we were last there connecting with the body. And so it's not going to take a minute. It's not going to take 5 minutes. It might not even take a week. It's a process and it takes time. And if you don't judge, if you allow yourself to move through this experience and this journey with a non-judgmental stance, allowing yourself to be patient, giving yourself grace and time, you 100% will get there. And there is a difference between the body's physical hunger and then the mind being hungry, or what we call emotional hunger. When we are really, truly hungry, when hunger sets in, it's slight. And over time, it gradually starts to increase. We feel hunger in our stomach. We might get headaches later. We might get a little bit dizzy. And generally, we feel this way because it's been a moment since we ate. It's been several hours since we've last eaten. Whereas emotional hunger or mind hunger, you know it's going to be that when you notice that it's suddenly onset, it's very extreme, and it's very specific. Even though you just ate, you might suddenly notice that you were triggered by an emotion, even if that emotion was joy or boredom, not just a negative or low vibration emotion. And all of a sudden now you're turning to food, a very specific food that's going to give you immediate energy. And so when we are in an emotional hunger state or a mind hunger state, then we are very specific around foods that will give us immediate energy. So these are generally fast food or refined foods or junk food that are very high in sugar and calories and energy. And when you're in this place and you've been emotionally triggered towards food, you'll also notice that it's very specific. If you crave chocolate, it has to be chocolate. Nothing else will satisfy it. Whereas when you have real hunger, like, yeah, Mexican sounds good. Let's go for Mexican. Yeah, sushi sounds great. That's fine. Yeah, sure. I'll go for a bowl of maybe rice or quinoa and some edamame and tofu. That sounds really great too. And so you'll notice that you're more wide open, and that you are allowing possibility of more foods. And more importantly, what you're wanting to eat is more of real food or more natural food or whole foods.
Yes, I love all of that. For everyone listening, rewind, go back, listen to all of that part, because there are so many important cues in there that Sherry was just sharing. I think that some of the things that I'm taking away from that, from my own experience, that is so important is that reconnecting with the body and remembering how it is that the body's wisdom can talk to us. Because I have talked to so many people through the years, what you're talking about, people that say like, oh, listen to your body. I'm like, but majority of people don't know how to listen to their bodies. They are listening to that mind or to those emotions or to that conditioning. They are not listening to the core of their being. Therefore, then their actions are not in integrity or in congruence or in alignment with what is good for them at that moment. And I think that's a huge part of understanding that, as you're saying, there's processes of unlearning, of healing from whatever way we do that, whether that's with therapists, with energy, with movement, somatically, like whatever way it is that we need to heal and rewire our brain and our system to come back to a place of coherence so that then we can actually function. And what I have talked to so many people about is I love what you're saying about that restricting with the dieting. A lot of times I talk to a lot of my clients and they feel what you were saying about that guilt when they didn't do exactly what that diet needed to be, and they feel guilty. They cannot even tell that to their nutritionist or to their health coach or whatever. And I'm like, well, there's an issue there, first, of that perspective. But as well, and this is one of the things that I tell a lot of times to people, I choose what I'm eating. I choose what I want to eat. and not what I'm restricting myself. I had this happening a while ago. I went to this dinner with some people, and I'm vegan, and then we went to this restaurant, and someone grabbed the menu. And he's like, "Oh, Brian, you can't have most of this." And I'm like, "Yes, I can have this. I'm choosing to have this other one."
Yes.
Because that's my choice. That's what feels good for me. And that is in alignment with my values and with what I need at this moment. And this is one of the key things I think from what you were saying about dieting. We are so conditioned on that restriction. And there's an inner conflict when we are in that space of, no, I can't, but I want it, but no, I can't. And then there's this emotional thought pattern thing going on. And we kind of like push through. And if we can just choose what is a yes, yes to this, yes to that. And that, for me at least, it changes. It's super empowering because I am now choosing. I am noticing, oh, this actually feels right. This actually is, oh, actually I ate this and I feel a little bit bloated. So for the future, I'm not sure if I'm going to keep on choosing that. And it's not I can't have this. I mean, of course, there's people that have allergies or have certain conditions that in that moment, unless they can heal that, then they can't really have that. There's this thing for me of empowering ourselves to choose what's a yes and to understand as well with that the huge importance that nowadays, if we go online, every single food, we can find a reason why that's not good. You can't have this because of that. And it's like, if we keep on listening to all of that, we cannot eat.
That's true.
So yeah. Like that's a huge part on the empowering and of knowing what's good. And yes, understanding that we need to be compassionate as we make a transition to remember how it is that we do that.
So good. Oh my gosh. Everything that you just said right now, like this summarizes everything that we do in life, and it's all about choice. And, you know, when we're really tuned into our messaging, the body, and just how to differentiate between the two, our body's cues will always be around love and kindness. If we really listen to our body, exactly what you just said, Brian. I go out, I eat a certain food, maybe I have too much gluten or dairy or whatever that is, and I don't feel well the next day. My body's cues that I'm going to listen to is just asking for kindness. Can you please maybe make another choice, because this isn't feeling so great. This doesn't really serve me. Whereas our mind's cues are generally very, very destructive thoughts. They're very self-deprecating ideas. And so there's this part of us, I call this part of us, the voice in our head, this imp, okay, standing for the voice of impossibility. When you're noticing that there's this voice in your head telling you that you can't, that you shouldn't, that you're not good enough, that you look a certain way that's not good enough, that you have some sort of defect of some sort, or there's something about you that you need to change, you're flawed in many ways, nobody likes you, you're not enough, that is the voice of the imp. That is the voice of impossibility. And you have to really be able to differentiate between the two. Anytime you hear that voice that's really not that nice, talking to you in a way that you don't accept anyone else to talk to you like, that is the voice of the imp. And that's not the voice that we should follow. If we listen to the body's cues, it's always going to say, ooh, move today because that feels good and that's going to serve me. Or maybe that's too much movement. That won't serve me. That's actually a bit too much today. And the same thing with food. And so this really always comes down to the nervous system, which is really behind all of our behavior. Because every single thought that we have in our body and in our mind is going to result in a direct emotion, which is really a chemical reaction. So for every thought that we have in the body and in the mind, we create chemistry in the body. And so sometimes that doesn't seem very tangible, but the way that the process happens is first through the five senses, we pick up information from the environment and then we create a thought. It's the only way we have a thought, because we saw something, we smelled something, we tasted something, we heard something, and maybe we remembered something because something cued us or stimulated us to remember it. Now we have a thought. The thought creates a neurotransmitter. The neurotransmitter that's made in the brain creates a neuropeptide, which is a little messenger protein. And it goes to a particular site in the body which we call energy centers, or maybe someone is familiar with them as chakras. But really what they are nerve bundles. They actually have their own magnetic field around them. And these nerve bundles, they create hormones. So there's a receptor site there, and there's a hormone that's created, and that is ultimately going to give us an emotion. And whatever the emotion is that we have, that's really the quality of our life. Whatever emotions we sit in the most is the quality of our life, because every single emotion is going to drive an action. And if we repeat the action over and over and over and over and over again, it's a habit. And now that's our behavior. And ultimately, that's our character. And so I know this sounds really far-fetched, but I'm going to ask you, what happens when you watch a scary movie? Okay, I know this is Hollywood. I know there's a lot of money that went into the graphics and all these things, and everyone's acting. Yet why am I sweating? Why am I feeling afraid? Why am I afraid to go to bed at night? Why is it still bothering me for 3 days? Why am I afraid to put my feet under my bed? Right? But it's because we watch that movie. Or when we watch a sad movie, we're stimulated in the same way. Our whole body reacts. And so that all comes from imagery and through a thought in our mind. Well, imagine when we speak negatively to ourselves. We also create an impact in the body. If I call myself disgusting and gross and fat and not good enough and all of these words, I'm creating chemistry in the body that is going to match that. And when I create the chemistry in the body that's going to match that, then the voice of the imp is always going to show up every single time I'm trying to move away from that, because that's my self-concept. It's who I think I am. And so the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, is divided into two components. There's sympathetic nervous state, and then there's parasympathetic. Sympathetic is known as fight or flight. I call this protection mode, is what I refer to it as. And then there is safety mode, or parasympathetic, rest and digest. Now, when we are in sympathetic nervous state, that is an emergency situation for us. That is our body being on high alert and seeking survival. And so if we're going to seek survival, because if really there is a threat for whatever reason in our environment, our thoughts are going to be projected always on worst case scenarios. When we're in fight or flight, when we're in protection mode, our thoughts are always about things that will give us emotions of worry, doubt, not enough, frustration, loss, regret. And our thoughts generally are either projected in the future to try to predict what can happen, or they're projected in the past, trying to rehash what happened in the past to predict the future, or because we can't let go of something. Whereas when we are in safety mode, or when we are in parasympathetic, rest and digest, we're very much in the present moment. We're very here and now. We have calmness. We have peace. That's where we can be creative. I can't be creative if I'm worried about what's happening in my environment, but I can have creativity when I feel calm and relaxed, and I'm well fed, and everything is good, and my temperature is good. All the things are good. And so why this is important is because when we engage in negative self-talk and we allow for that in the way that we use our language, even the language of I can't eat this, I can't have that, I won't do that, I can't, I'm not allowed, even that type of language, that triggers protection mode. That immediately triggers us into protection mode. If somebody is yelling at me, calling me names, I'm going to get ready to fight. My body's getting ready to attack. I'm ready. I'm in fight or flight. And yet we are doing that all day long in our mind. So we're constantly in protection mode. And so a really great way for you to determine how much of your time, again, coming back to the quality of your emotions or the quality of your life, how much of your time do you notice you spend in these emotions? If you notice that most of your emotions all day, you're always worried, you're always stressed, you're blaming people, you're criticizing yourself, you're never feeling like you're good enough, you have a lot of fear, there's a lot of doubt, uncertainty, you're most likely in protection mode. And when we are in this nervous system state, we have this process in the body where, number one, we slow down our metabolism because we try to conserve energy. Number two, we try to store as much energy as possible. So you're going to notice that you have cravings for sugar and fast food. And again, food that really can help store that energy as quickly as possible. You're going to feel lethargic in your body because, again, your body's trying to conserve energy, so it's harder to move. And then you're just going to notice that there's not a lot of possibility. And so we oftentimes experience unwanted behavior or self-sabotage really because we're in protection mode. And so if we want to get out of that, again, just coming back to evaluating our thoughts and noticing that if I go to a party and somebody offers me something to eat and I've made a commitment around my rituals, instead of saying I can't have that, I say I don't. I choose not to. And that's a very, very different mindset. Because anytime we feel trapped, anytime we feel limited, Anytime that we feel like we don't have possibility, that is a sign that we are in a survival state. And again, that's a reflection of protection mode.
Yeah, I love that. I a lot of times with my students at university, we touch a lot on the importance of understanding the nervous system and how to move into the parasympathetic nervous system, at least more, because our society is actually functioning in a way that we are always in that sympathetic, alert, stressed, and that creates chronic pain, or even, as you're saying, that is what creates actually our behavior. And this is one of the things that I often share with my students. You know, we need to feel safe. We need to feel safe in our environment. We need to feel safe in our inner environment. And with that comes, you know, a lot of the whatever methodology, whatever way, we need to re-engage with ourselves. We need to develop a relationship with ourselves, with all of our parts, accepting of all of that. As you're saying, you know, we are conditioned. We have all of these emotions. We have all of these different patterns that are taking place. And the more that we can understand them, the easier it is to understand, this is the way that I change my behavior, by creating sustainable habits that are going to then influence my behavior. And that's then how I'm showing up in the world, because I am moving from what I often talk about. I can move from reacting to responding. And that, again, that comes to that ownership, to taking responsibility, to understanding how I'm wanting to show up as a more conscious being instead of an automatic pilot. So moving from reacting to responding for me is huge. And to know that, as you're saying, the importance of feeling safe. Most people, we don't know how that is. We don't know in our bodies how it feels to feel safe. I'm so glad that throughout all of the years of my own path, I have been able to learn how to do that and how to develop that connection to that place that you were saying, that love and kindness towards myself, that's a natural response that we have. How to re-engage with it is so important for so many people. And I love something, I'm not sure if you have, I think that you haven't mentioned it today, but you mentioned it in a previous conversation that we have on as well, how to love, I think that it was make peace with the food that you eat or something like that you mentioned last time. And I think that it's the same for every aspect of our life, just making peace with it. And the more that we are able to do that, the easier it is to navigate life, as, you know, we go through challenges, we go through different experiences. I mean, you shared earlier, you went through so many of those, and it's easier to see them and, you know, like saying like, that's what happened and now I can get the learning. How can we learn how to navigate all of these situations better whilst they are happening? Because yes, there's life. Life is going to happen. And the more that we understand, the more that we reconnect, the more that we remember that reconnection with our inner wisdom, the easier it is to actually engage with life.
So good. I love that. I love that so much. And, you know, I love this word safe, because I don't think a lot of us really understand what that means, right? So if I say, oh, Brian, I'm feeling safe. Or if I ask you, are you feeling safe? It's like, well, what do you mean? There's nobody holding a gun against my head. Of course I'm safe. Like, I'm in my house and it's fine, right? But that's not really what it means. There doesn't have to be a violent attack. There doesn't have to be a physical threat to you for you to not feel safe. Just simply through you not being able to relax in your environment, you noticing that you're not able to release those thoughts of worry, doubt, fear, that is an indication that you're not feeling safe. And again, the stimulus could be your own negative self-talk. If you wake up in the morning, the first thing you're like, oh, it's Monday. God, I hate it. Like, oh my God, all these clients. Oh, I have to do all this. Oh my God. And then you go in the mirror, like, oh, I look at it. So disgusting, so gross. Like, I can't believe I'm so big. That is not allowing yourself to ever feel safe. And so the big, really driving force behind making peace with food, which is a program that I help women go through to overcome unwanted eating behavior like binge eating or emotional eating or stress eating, the way that they're able to overcome their unwanted eating behavior, so that way it's a non-issue and they're no longer gaining weight as a side effect of it, is again to bring themselves to safety, just to learn, first of all, like you were saying, that we are feeling unsafe, that we actually are in chronic protection mode for not just years, but likely decades. This could have stemmed from childhood, except the body does an amazing job of adapting. It is a master adapter. Whatever stimulus you give the body, it's always looking for homeostasis. Even if my homeostasis is always stressed, always angry, always yelling at everyone, always blaming everyone, always criticizing myself, that is my homeostasis. And so that's all it's ever known. And I've been feeling unsafe actually this whole entire time, constantly cortisol, constantly self-sabotaging behavior, unwanted eating behaviors, constantly not seeing my health progress in the way that it will and could and should. And so regardless of how much effort I'm putting in, even if I've hired a nutritionist and a trainer and I'm working out every day and I'm doing yoga, it's not working because I'm always still re-stimulating protection mode. And it becomes this loop and this pattern that we've actually installed in our unconscious mind. And so if we really want to make a change in any area of our life, and how we do anything is how we do everything, the way that we show up around food, for example, this exposes a lot of our beliefs around life. If you notice that you have to finish off all your plate, well, what does that say about how you view life? Do you feel like there's scarcity or is there abundance? If you notice that there's something in the fridge, and even though you're full, you're going to eat it because you want to eat it before somebody else gets to it, are you seeing scarcity or abundance in your life? And if you notice that you tend to overeat, even when you're done eating, that again, you still go for seconds. And even though you're super full, what does that say about how you view service, accessibility, and resources in life? And so we always say, again, if we really want to determine what our belief systems are in life, let's just look at how we behave around food, because that really shows us a lot. If we have a tendency, for example, to snack in front of the TV at night, and that's actually where we get our feeling of comfort from, well, that shows that we have a need for safety. Why do we not feel safe the rest of the day? Is it because it's a stressful job? Maybe it's not fulfilling. Maybe it's a toxic relationship. Maybe there's a reason of overwhelm, for example, and you're always looking forward to this one moment where it's your alone time, it's your you time. And so I invite anybody listening to just, instead of judging their behavior, to just learn from it and just be curious. Well, what is this saying about me? If I tend to binge eat, if I'm emotionally eating, what needs is this serving? And more importantly, how is this maybe revealing what my belief systems are about life?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. Sherry, I think that we might need to have a second conversation to go through so many of the topics that I want to keep on talking with you. I feel like, you know, as we are going back and forth, it's like all of these amazing things that hopefully everybody that is listening is taking away a lot from this conversation. As we are coming towards the end of this conversation, at least, where can people find you? How can they work with you? How can they actually engage to transform if they want through all of the things that you're doing?
Oh, thank you so much, Brian. I just want to say too that I love this conversation and I really feel like we could just keep going. I don't even believe that the time flew, and you're really amazing at what you do. You have so much love and light and care in all of this energy that you're sending out. And so please keep doing what you're doing. And I would be so honored to come back if you want to continue the conversation. But if anyone wanted to reach out, they could go to my Instagram account. At Sherry Chaban Fitness is the handle. I'm also on YouTube, same handle. And then if you are looking really to overcome any unwanted eating behavior, I have a little free download for you. It's a workbook that you can use for self-reflection. There's several tips in there to really get you started on your journey. And then you can download that at makepeacewithfood.com.
Beautiful. I'll put all of the links in the show notes so that if you're listening or watching this, go in there, easy access to all of the links. So if you resonated with anything that Sherry said or the way that she's engaging with her work, go check it out. It's always great to be able to understand what we resonate with, and to understand what we resonate with, we need to understand how we feel. So I hope that if you have listened to this episode up until this moment, leave us a comment, whatever it is that you're finding in this. What did you learn? What did you hear that was new and different? Have you already done some of this? Share your stories with us. And thank you for listening. And thank you so much, Sherry, once more for taking the time for this wonderful conversation with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, everyone. And until next time, bye.
What did you like the most about this episode? Take a moment to think about what change you can make in your life today.
Share your conscious action on social media using hashtag ConsciousAction and tagging at ConsciousActionNZ so we can celebrate your impact on the world and create a ripple effect.
One easy action we would love for you to take right now is to share, like, and subscribe to this podcast. This will help us get these messages out into the world and inspire more people to take conscious action in their own lives, contributing to the better world we hope for.